Session number 16585, Karen Churchill, Reel 3.
Karen Churchill, Reel 3. Did you were saying you feel it's important to talk about these things, Karen?
Yes. It is, first of all, memories, the personal memories, no matter from whose corner, from what corner they come, they are like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle, which then build up a wider picture of why people behave in certain ways, and why events happen, and why events go in a certain direction. And that I find it's very important that people who actually remember must somehow come forward. That is how I feel about it. And when I was working in Morris Motors as a nurse, and of course all these old soldiers there that then working in the factory and so on, and well, that's interesting to talk to somebody from the other side. I didn't feel offended at all. You see, and then hackles rise and emotions go high and all these things. It's very understandable. You see? So
yes. Now I'm still keeping to this time before the bombing, the bombardment. Mm-hmm. Were the German people encouraged to give up any of their possessions, you know, precious metals?
Yes. Aluminium, you know, cooking pots and pans and whatever, anything aluminium was collected. There were great collection days for that. And then also gold, and then you got whatever, when you had a brooch, you gave your gold brooch, and you got a bit of iron for it, or this. My mother gave her a wedding ring, and she got an iron ring for that, a little iron ring. And so did many others. And so gold gab ich für Eisen, this sort of thing. And the iron railings and anything material which could be recycled for the war effort. But when you think of it, the war effort from Hitler's side, and the war effort from the British side, it was almost the same thing. And yet, the balance, it is. I mean, it is almost fate. Fate had to, how the needle of balance was going on such the breadth of a hair, it could have gone the other way. And that, of course, if I may put it this way, was the morale-rousing, inspired speeches of Churchill, which he. It is priceless.
Did you know anything about them during the war?
During the war, all I knew, sort of, you saw these caricatures in the paper. Sort of a little potchy little man, this sort of thing, and the caricatures, and very belittled and very, very ridiculed, this sort of thing. That's all one remembers. You see? Well, of course, you see, you know, the sour grapes of the fox, he will ridicule the grapes when he can't reach them.
It was interesting when you were talking earlier, you know, about your mother and the coupon to the prisoners of war. Were you, did you have many displaced persons, you know, or slave labour working in the Dresden area? Were you aware
yes.
of the sort of
yes.
that situation at all?
Yes, I wasn't aware who they were, but one thing I knew, they were wretched. They were wretched. And that probably what moved my mother to do just that little deed. And they were wretched. Thin, wretched. That's all I can say.
And did you know anything, you know, you were saying earlier about the concentration camps and the view you were given of
yes.
them.
Yes.
Did you know anything about, you know, the concentration camps?
No. 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 I didn't. It was only the end, when it came towards the end of the war, one heard concentration camp. And there was an over, sort of like an foreboding aura around it. I can't explain it. People didn't know what it was. They only knew that people went there. At first, of course, I thought, oh yes, where foreigners are being kept isolated, you know, so that they can't do damage to the German folk, this sort of thing. Well, but then, when one saw these wretched people working there, then one thought, what does this? Something wrong here. And you couldn't ask, you dare not ask. All you saw, you could see. I said, oh God, I wish the war would end. I wish the war would end. That was all that mattered. That's all that mattered. And then, that's again leapfrogging a little after the bombing. It's when we were fleeing, and of course my mother vanished. My father we found again, fortnight. And there were still these aeroplanes, these fighter planes with their machine guns shooting into the fleeing columns. And we were fleeing, and beside us there were columns of these with these striped columns of these emaciated fleeing. And they had these long sort of drive them along, and they were falling by the wayside into the ditch, didn't get up again, and they were from the concentration camp. Then it dawned. But then afterwards, when the Russian, it's going forward a little, when the Russian troops, liberators, if I may say, the Russian troops, somewhere else the Americans, somewhere else the English, when they were forcing the people to go into the village hall to watch the films, this is not possible, that cannot be possible, this is not possible. They were shocked and stunned. I mean, being confronted with this,
so what you're saying really supports the view that the great mass of German
they
people
didn't know.
Didn't know.
They didn't know.
And of course you were a very young girl in
it. Yes, yes,
weren't
yes.
You?
Yes, yes. But the reaction of the people, there's that this is, of course we all, I was then not quite 14, I was 13 and a half then. And all the people, this is not possible, they felt. Sick, they're absolutely, it's not possible, this is not possible. Seeing this, I mean, that was Armageddon. Terrible. Terrible. Well, you see, in view of that, oddly enough, I know history will document the moves of what to why certain strategic moves have been done. But when I think of discovering this, it is like it's Dante's Inferno. It is when they open these, the outrage, the shock, the outrage, the affront to civilization. No wonder they bombed Dresden. You see, I see that. But what I feel so aggrieved about is when then the actual atrocity, counter-atrocity, if I might put it this way, is being sort of sanitized and brought down to a tit-for-tat acceptable level of 35,000. That is wrong. Because that will never lay the ghost to rest. Because I feel what happened, people should come forward, should speak the truth, and let him be the judge. But to be honest, it's our very first duty. That's how I feel.
Well, and you're being very honest with me, Karin, and thank you very much. We'll have a little pause. I haven't actually asked you about this, but I wondered if it made much of a sort of impression on you or any impact when America came into the war. Did that affect morale at all in Germany?
I, speaking from my own personal experience as a child, I cannot really see or remember any significant change. All I remember is the resolve of the people. Well, here the same. The harder it got, the more they were resolved. Yes, they were ever so, and said, well, we. They thought we have to win the war. You see, it's only a few people who think otherwise. Because in general, when you look at the general mass of people. If I may, as a comparison. Here in England, everybody has their newspaper. Two or three newspapers read opposing views, have their discussions in the pub or whatever. But they try to form their own opinion. In Germany, they are far more... it's more important that they get their house in order. Their house in order, you see, and then this. And all the politics is being left to the politicians. So they follow their leader. The mass of people. Well, here they don't. Thank God, so far. That's my observation, excuse me. So what I see, I've been here now for almost 40 years, and look in when I go back, and when I go back and see a lot of things and what I remember and so on. It's a marked difference.
Do you yourself remember, you know, as you were growing up during the war, did you have any sense that perhaps the war was going against Germany, say Stalingrad or at any time after that?
I think after Stalingrad, yes. 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 There was a great foreboding hanging over us like a cloud. And then these hysteric rantings of Hitler coming through the wireless there, shrieking through the wireless there.
Up until the time of the big bombardment of Dresden, which, of course, was it February 45?
Yes, 13th, 14th February. Yes.
Well, had there been any air activity?
No.
Over Dresden?
No.
Nothing at all?
Nothing at all. Nothing I can remember. Can't remember anything. We had sort of warnings, exercises, if I would say. But that was all. Because it was considered a safe city, and of course, culture-loving people wouldn't destroy a jewel like that, and we always felt quite safe in that knowledge. But then, of course, it was not to be.
Had you heard of Hamburg and other places?
Yes, Wuppertal and Hamburg and this. Yes, we felt how terrible that was, and then that's...
Have there been any sort of civil defence measures, like shelters built,
nothing. Nothing at all. Absolutely nothing. All there was you had buckets of sand. That's all you had. Probably here in England, just the same. They had their buckets of sand. You see, so with a little bucket of sand there, my goodness me, you can't stop an inferno. Yes, that's all. And you had them placed in your shelters there, and that was it.
Had you any idea that time that something was going to happen?
No. We were... There was no air defence whatsoever, none, no aircraft. Oh, there was a few anti-aircraft guns placed round Dresden. But strangely enough, on the night, or just before the raid, two nights or something before, they were removed. We all thought it was sabotage, that somehow they were removed by saying, oh, a raid is imminent somewhere else, we need the guns there. And yet, Dresden was totally undefended. And it was, my father came home, he had home leave, and my brother came home. Because my brother came from France just the night before on home leave, on his sort of home leave. And that is why my mother broke into her food rationing carts for the next decade, as we called, and going to the shops and say, oh yes, my son will be coming on home leave. How do you know he hasn't written to you? I know, she said, I know. And so she bought food, and my brother came, and the next evening my father came on home leave. And then the following evening, this happened. They went to bed. I was still sitting up. It was about 9:30, I would say. And I was sewing a carpet bag for a school friend of mine. And I heard it's a roaring noise. A roaring noise, and didn't know what it was. We had no warning at all. A roaring noise. I looked out, and then immediately came the full warning. If there's an air raid, you get a pre-warning, then the full warning. But this was the full warning immediately. That must have been about 9:30, something like that, 9:45, something like that, because I remember they went to bed, I was still sitting up, this, and then the sky was lit up with all these Christmas trees, these sort of flares. They were all in this sort of shape of lit up Christmas trees, all over the sky, and then hell broke loose. It was terrible, absolutely terrible. It immediately, of course, we ran into the cellar, sort of grabbed what we had. My mother, she grabbed was two boxes, a Japanese lacquer box with all the photographs, and another Japanese lacquer box with all the documents under her arm and down into the cellar. And we had, that was a vaulted cellar, like these big old wine cellars, these vaulted cellars, and the corner house, big corner house. And of course the people all in there, and my brother was there, my father was there, and they, of course, those two in uniform, immediately started organizing people, said that you have to be there and go there, and there's a pillar, be there. And then of course we heard all the noise going on, and very hot. And a bomb came into the, on an angle, it's when you have the road like this, and the house is standing up, you see this, a bomb came in like that, into the cellar, there. It didn't go off, diagonally in. And of course, pandemonium. And we tried to clamber out of it, through that hole through. And I held my mother at the back of, you know, sort of held her. She had a blanket around her. And I held her and I clambered out. And then in order to clamber out, I let go of her. And that was the last I knew of her. Of course, coming out of that channel there, which the bomb left, there was an inferno. Wind. And the force of that storm. As soon as one was out there, my brother went out before me. I just saw him sitting. There was a light. It's as if you look into a burning oven there. And he was in the sort of bit of masonry or whatever it was. He sat in the corner of that. That just grabbed him. He was holding his eyes.
And was that your twin brother?
That was my twin brother. My elder brother, I didn't find. My father, I didn't find. My mother, I didn't find at all. I found my father and my brother a fortnight later. And we were swept along before with that force of that storm along the coast. And of course, there was that long Marshallstraße. We were Rietrichstraße. The River Elbe is here. The street, Rietrichstraße, going down to the Elbe. Marshallstraße is a very long, long, long street. And of course, you have that wind, that firestorm drove you down. We sort of, the flames licked around this corner. We went down to the Elbe. And there on the Elbe, the River Elbe, people burning. Of course, they threw phosphor as well. And phosphor burns on the water. You saw all these people trying to go into the water to save themselves from the flames. There was no escape. The phosphor was burning on the water. And of course, then you saw all these bodies everywhere. And of course, back again. And you had to have your gas masks. But it's pointless having them because it was melting onto the faces of the people. And I mean, things like that. And all I just had my brother. He couldn't see. Took him. And we then were just wildly milling around. And then trying to just, with a throng of people, you know, fleeing. And then trying to go into a cellar. You couldn't. In a cellar, you saw people sitting there, all sitting there, but they're all dead. Oh, you see, this is what happens with this dreadful fire. It drags the oxygen out, and on the spot they just asphyxiated. And also people on wagons, or if there were no cars or anything, because there weren't any. But if there happened to be a vehicle of something, people clambered on it or tried to. Well, if they happened to be in the wake of one of those firestorms, the oxygen thrown out of them, they sat on there, just that, and you tipped them on and they went over. All that. And then so we just went wrong. It was almost time. You couldn't record time. You couldn't record what time or how long it took. And then coming back or trying to go back. And then later, about a fortnight later, we came back to the spot, my brother and I.
Of course, what happened to you after this? You know, after that big raid? Was it just the one enormous raid?
That enormous raid. It came that one night. There came all these waves of bombers, night bombers.
And could you see the planes?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they were very low, in fact. And then shut the phosphor down, or they came down. And then during the day, other raids, we have been told that they were the American planes. History says they were, but of course, planes are planes. waves of it. And my husband, he got the figures of how many there were. Altogether, it's almost 2,000 planes. And then also, when we were then fleeing out, as I mentioned before, there were fighter planes, American Mustangs, I know now, but machine gunning the refugees down, including the refugees from the concentration camp. All this, they were the American with their prairie hunters spirit, you see, get the bar for this sort of thing. Well, and this, so you just mill around.
What sort of state were you in? Had you suffered burns yourself?
No, apart singed hair, you know, all the singeing and this sort of thing, but no actual burns that way. But it was that storm, that storm, very hot indeed. But I haven't been burned. My skin wasn't burned. My hair was singed and all. But we went round to the end. But my brother went off through the heat or smoke or whatever. He lost his sight. And one eye, he recovered later. One eye recovered later. But he lost one eye. Well, that's small price, but even so.
In your flight, you know, and you have described things so well, you know, can you remember any sort of visions of the city that you saw?
Ruins. Not just the coming out there and that Marshallstrasse with these enormous, just think, look down Oxford Street with these big, big houses. Well, it's rubble and just chimneys stuck standing up. And if you see in the distance a person walking, you cried, mother, and the chimney stacks fall down by the echo of your voice. Just like by the echo of your voice, you bring down an avalanche. This, it's so eerie. You see, we try and come back and trying to look for her, you see, and that's when I clambered back into that hole and found these two little, you see, you saw, when you look into the oven or furnace or whatever, and you put wood into a furnace or whatever you burn, and it burns and it gets red hot, and it still keeps its shape somehow with an inner glow, but when you touch it, it disintegrates. That's how it was. That's when I found this.
Are you talking about finding your mother?
Yes.
So what could you tell me about that, if possible?
Well, that I just found that, and that's all. I didn't know who it was, but I remember it was her because I recognized the earrings.
So it was just a little pile of ashes.
Yes.
With your mother's shape, was it?
Well, it was a person's sort of shape, you see. So there's other people as well, you see, and you look through these things and trying to identify something, and that's what I recognized.
Yes, that
I remember. And of course the my father, we didn't know, he was gone, and so was my brother. And then of course every time, everywhere you see a number of people, everybody did the same. They were calling out names. And later, when sort of the end of the war and slightly after the end of the war, there were still in cinemas reels and reels of names on the, you see, when you see the news and then announcements on the cinema screen, names. This and this person is seeking that and that person, and so on, reels of names of that. But of course, we found my father on the railway station, just calling out his name, and there he was. And so my brother, on another occasion, so we found him there as well.
What sort of state were they in? You know, your father.
Well, very, very smoke burned and shocked and devastated, and of course what you would expect. But of course the relief of having found us, you see.